fighting for America.
Unless we get on our high horse and think this is unique to some other place, remember that during the Crusades and the Inquisition, people committed terrible deeds in the name of Christ.
Fighting for Idaho.
Who decides when a law-abiding citizen is trained enough to defend themselves? And I don't think any of us, whether that's the legislators, the sheriffs, other citizens, have the right to tell someone when they are qualified to defend their life.
Fighting for you.
The pipeline is the way that they carry the product from the wells.
I know what a pipeline is, but okay. No, I'm saying...
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Good morning. Welcome to Monday. Kevin Miller in the Morning, 580 KIDO. Coming up, the latest on Brian Williams. Also, remember the Interstate 84 lane patterns change today, so take some extra time as you're walking your way in. In addition to that, today is National Pizza Day. Imagine that. A lot going on today, and of course, most of us, if we don't own a home, aspire to own a home. And what about dealing with contractors? Contractors, always a tough issue. I know me personally, I can never find a good one. Joining us now from Atlanta is Faye Moore from the National Center for the Prevention of Home Improvement Fraud. Faye, good to have you with us here.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. Good morning.
So they have shows on television about avoiding fraud, avoiding bad contractors. Is it possible that, we just can't find the good ones? Where are they?
Well, they're out there, and we want to applaud them because they are, terrific guys that, just want to make an honest living, do great work. But there are a lot of bad guys out there, too, and we've seen them. My grandmother was actually a victim of a home repair scam, and that's why I started the organization.
Well, I don't know where we begin. I mean, it's almost one of those things where you're going to have to show instead of tell, whether it's someone that's supposed to do your lawn and your sprinklers and they don't work. And, we always have a promise. It seems that homeowners or any of us, we don't want to think that our contractor is bad. And even though when they don't show up when they're supposed to or don't do the work they're supposed to, we almost rationalize, well, let's just give them another day or so.
Yeah, and that's why there are several things that you can do to help you, navigate the process and become your own quality control manager. And that is, obviously having a terrific contract. You also want to control the money. He who controls the money controls the job. And you want to make sure that you stay on the top of the project by being involved. You can't just, leave a contractor in your home to work on something and not stay on top of the work that he's doing.
That's the tough part, Faye, when you think about, contracting someone to do their job. Most people think, well, I trust them to do it, whether it's a contractor or a real estate agent, and they assume that they're going to do their job, but that's not always the case.
That is not always the case, and that's why, again, I stress that, if a contractor is in your home, you need to be there. And if you can't, then you need to at least look at the project on an ongoing basis. Every day if possible, see what's been done, ask questions at the end of the day, just kind of get a grip on what's going on. And again, if you can't be on site when the contractor is doing the work, you may want to consider hiring a third-party code-certified inspector that can, be your eyes.
Well, a lot of people say, well, now, Faye, that's going to a lot of trouble when I just want my roof fixed. Is it worth it?
Well, it depends on how much money you spend. I have so many people that contact me on a daily basis who have been taken advantage of, and had they done the work up front, they could have avoided the nightmare. And as a nonprofit, we educate homeowners on how to protect themselves from home repair scams, and our services are free. So, we are contacted all the time after the fact. And I have a lady specifically that was after a tornado, 3 years after the tornado. She's still not in her home, and she's still having issues with her contractor. And it's because she didn't do a lot of things up front.
Let me hit you with this. By the way, you're also the author of Don't Even Think About Ripping Me Off, and we'll talk a little bit about that. But, some of the folks that I've had dealings with, I had a guy that says, well, you live out there in Star, and I don't have many crews out there. And I'm like, bro, I've already paid you, or I've paid you half. You're acting like you're doing me a favor for doing a job that you wanted to begin with.
Yeah, and you just don't. It's controlling the money, and that's we put that in the book because it's a step-by-step guide on how to find, hire, work with, and pay contractors. And you know, one of the areas that a lot of people aren't aware of as to how to navigate it is the payment process. And you know, so many people pay half up front, a third up front. That's a lot of money giving to someone that you're not sure is going to take off with it. And that's why it's so important. And we cover all this in the book. I know we don't have a lot of time to go into it today, but that's why it's so important. I can't stress it enough that everyone should take a minute and educate themselves before they hire somebody. There used to be a day when you could just get three references and call the Better Business Bureau. That day is gone. You have to do that and so much more.
Well, no, I'm with you, but how do you deal with someone, let's say, we'll call him Timmy, the contractor that I had that was recommended by a lot of people, and you know, all of a sudden, Timmy doesn't want to show up because most of his business, let's say, is in Meridian or Boise, and I live, you know, a few miles out in Star. And I'm like, Timmy, you've known my wife for years, you know, and then Timmy's boys come out there and they do a haphazard job, and Timmy's telling me how bad his crew is.
Yeah.
Going, should you really be telling me how the guy didn't put a lot of effort into this and that you're mad at him that you have to come out and do the job that you're getting paid for?
Well, you know, getting someone who your wife knows or, you know, is your, you know, coworker's second cousin, you know, those emotional relationships can get tricky. And regardless of where you get your contractor from, you must remember that this is a business transaction. And regarding him not showing up or somebody else showing up instead of him, these things should be detailed in your contract. And we go into that in the book as to what should and should not be in your contract, because that's another area that needs to be looked at by a homeowner before you get involved in something.
So you actually say, and you've said this a couple of times, and I want to spell it out for folks here at 580KIDO, that you should come up with a written contract and have both of you sign it before you agree to let these guys do some work for you?
Absolutely. And more often than not, the contractor is going to give you his form contract, and you don't have to sign it just because, you know, he presents it. You know, you need to have protections in the contract also, and if you are not sure as to the language of the contract, then get with a legal licensed legal professional in your state, in Idaho, you know, who understands contracts. And have them review it. You know, it may cost you a couple hundred bucks, but it's certainly worth it than spending, you know, $50,000 on a project and the guy isn't doing it right and you cannot get out of the contract.
Now, again, you have people that want to avoid conflict, Faye. And, you know, what goes on in the mind of these contractors? Because I have this all the time where people call in at 580KIDO and say, Kevin Miller, you know, I had a guy that was going to do some drywall, and I haven't heard from him in 3 weeks. How do they justify their behavior? You go inside this. What's going on with them?
Well, if you haven't heard from the guy in 3 weeks, then that shouldn't be a problem if he's starting the job, because you shouldn't have given him any money yet. So if you haven't heard from him in 3 weeks, you know, he said he was going to come do the job, and you haven't heard from him in 3 weeks, then there should be no loss other than the time you've lost waiting on him. But, you know, you should not have given him any money up front.
Right. No money up front, if you will.
Absolutely. I'm a firm believer in that. And then, you know, there are a lot of folks out there who suggest giving 10% of the project cost or $1,000, whichever is less. Well, $1,000 is a lot of money to me. I'm not giving money up front.
Right. And is there any way that you can tell that somebody's reputable? I mean, is it recommendations? Is it work history? We talked about your third cousin's Uncle Timmy isn't going to help you, but based on your research and at the National Center for Prevention of Home Improvement Fraud, what can you, any tips that you can pass along to us?
Well, you don't really know a contractor until you know a contractor. You know, you don't really know someone until you marry them. So, you know, but you can take precautions up front. And again, that's what we cover in the book. What you need to do proactively to prevent an opportunity for somebody to take advantage of you, and that would be what's in that contract and what's not in that contract. And regardless of where you get your contractor from, you absolutely must vet him. You must check him out. Don't just go by the insurance card he gave you. Pick up the phone and call his insurance company and confirm that he is actually covered, currently covered, and will be covered throughout your project. You know, if you're installing a new kitchen, it may take 3 months. You want to make sure he's covered, that full time. So, there are a lot of things that you can do to protect yourself up front.
And how can we get a hold of you from your book? If you can give us the title again and the website one more time, too.
Sure. The book is entitled Don't Even Think About Ripping Me Off. And it is on Amazon, and it is on our website, preventcontractorfraud.org. And we are a free service for any homeowners who have issues dealing with contractors that they need questions answered. And we are a safe, unbiased place for homeowners to go to get the information they need.
What's the biggest part of the home improvement area that people get rid of? Is it remodeling the kitchen, the lawn that you
that
found?
That they get ripped off
mm-hmm.
the most? Roofing.
Really? Why?
Well, more often than not, the homeowner doesn't go up on the roof to see if they actually have damage.
Right.
And, there are a lot of people who, want to replace the blue bathtub or the pink bathtub in their home, but when a hailstorm comes through, 2,000 homes could possibly have damage. So, from the numbers perspective, the roofing industry is where a lot of people get taken advantage of. But, it can happen. I had a lady contact me and say she was ripped off by a gardener. And so, it could happen in any form of contractor.
Well, I was going to say the roof would be tough because, again, it comes down to materials as well. You have to,
absolutely.
If they're using the materials they're charging you for. But you're saying, Faye, you've got to be diligent. You can't take anybody's word for it. You got to look and see if everything's copacetic.
Yeah, I wish that, it was, a little more cut and dry. You find somebody and they're going to do the job and you pay them and, you go on with your life and they go on with theirs. But the easiest way for a thief to get into your house is to say he's a contractor. And you can't tell the difference just by looking at him. So you must be on top of your project. It's your project, it's your home, and it's certainly your money.
Faye, we appreciate it. Good luck to you. Thank you. We'd love to have you back.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me. You guys have a wonderful, wonderful day.
All right. Faye Moore joining us from the National Center to Prevent Home Improvement Fraud here at 580KIDO. Coming up next, some folks at MSNBC say not so fast going after Brian Williams. And the big question here is, should he be fired? And what job can you get where you do something wrong and you voluntarily take some time off and get paid for it? Does that work for you? Well, apparently it's working for Brian Williams. 580KIDO, 618. Time for
Treasure Valley's exclusive home for Kevin Miller. KIDOAM.com. 580KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
We were in some helicopters. What we didn't know was we were north of the invasion. We were the northernmost Americans in Iraq. We were going to drop some bridge portions across the Euphrates so the 3rd Infantry could cross on them. Two of our 4 helicopters were hit by ground fire, including the one I was in.
No kidding.
RPG and AK-47.
What altitude were you hit at?
We were only at 100 feet doing 100 forward knots because we had these massive pieces of bridge beneath us on slings.
What happens the minute everybody realizes you've been hit?
We figure out how to land safely, and we did. We landed very quickly and hard, and we put down, and we were stuck. 4 birds in the middle of the desert, and we were north out ahead of the other Americans.
Oh, my.
And
there we have it, David Letterman with Brian Williams. Kevin Miller in the morning, 580KIDO, and now people are calling into question what Williams did at Katrina. his entire career. Apparently, this has been a problem for NBC for quite some time. You know, and yesterday I was talking to Mrs. Miller about this, and she goes, "Oh, you know what they're doing to that poor Brian Williams?" And I go, "That poor Brian Williams, well, he kind of did it to himself. He didn't kind of, he did do it to himself. And here you are, one of the most powerful positions in the country, if not the world, and you feel the need to embellish your own heroic deeds." And Brian Williams, who I've met a few times, nice, personable guy, if you will. But on the other hand, he, you know, jacked up his resume. And look, this is almost too easy to say, but if I don't say it, well, who's going to? Imagine if we weren't talking about Brian Williams, we were talking about Bill O'Reilly. We were talking about Glenn Beck. Remember how the media vilified Glenn Beck? And whether you like Glenn Beck or not, and whether you agree with Glenn Beck or not, Glenn Beck was right about the caliphate. Remember? Glenn Beck talked about what's happening now with ISIS when he was on the Fox News channel. And he was so right, it made the powers that be so uncomfortable that Glenn and Fox News parted ways. Now, you don't need me to be a cheerleader for Glenn Beck. He's got that. But he was right. But imagine if it were Glenn Beck that did this, or Sean Hannity. What do you think would happen? And let's just take it one step further. If it was Alex Jones, who the media has ridiculed, he'd be on the front page of every paper. And the libs, be that as they may, don't know how to handle this. Yesterday on George Stephanopoulos, you had someone from the Columbia Journalism Review said, hey, NBC should have taken action. There should be an outside counsel. But the big question here at 580-5436, 580-KIDO, what do you do with Brian Williams?
Because I can't be objective here. Mm-hmm. I'm hopeful that when all of the madness on Twitter and all the madness online and all the madness that's going on right now, the investigations that need to be going on, mm-hmm. we're not saying they don't need to be going on, but when the fury dies down and when we get through this storm and the decision is made to judge what Brian Williams' future should be, that decision will be based on the entirety of his career and not on one or two or three mistakes. Bad.
One lie, two lies, three lies. The entirety of his career. You know, like when George Bush had that story about getting busted for drinking while driving right before the election? Oh, he was the governor of Texas, never mind. Or the rush to judgment, as Newsbusters points out, in the Trayvon Martin case. Isn't it ironic that the media, when it's one of their own, doesn't want to have a rush to judgment? Oh, ho, ho, ho.
Mistakes, yes. They were bad mistakes. And guess what?
And he would say that.
Guess what? He says that. We all...
Does he really? Let's take a look and a listen at Brian Williams' pseudo-apology, shall we?
On this broadcast last week, in an effort to honor and thank a veteran who protected me and so many others after a ground fire incident in the desert during the Iraq War invasion, I made a mistake in recalling the events of 12 years ago. It did not take long to hear from some brave men and women in the air crews who were also in that desert. I want to apologize. I said I was traveling in an aircraft that was hit by RPG fire. I was instead in a following aircraft. We all landed after the ground fire incident and spent two harrowing nights in a sandstorm in the Iraq desert. This was a bungled attempt by me to thank one special veteran and, by extension, our brave military men and women, veterans everywhere, those who have served while I did not. I hope they know they have my greatest respect and also now my apology.
Right, my apology. How about, I'm sorry I lied? Bush lied, people died. Mm-hmm. How about that? Maybe it's in the new Americas we should be more forgiving and say, you know, like Joe Scarborough, I just hope that Brian Williams comes back. Well, if Brian Williams comes back, I think it proves that whether it's the millennials or anybody else, there's no trust when it comes to network anchors.
Make bad mistakes. I just, you know, what?
And remember, it was Brian Williams' intent to honor the troops. Now, you heard him on Letterman, He wasn't talking about the troops. He was describing how safe and how courageous he was.
The things, one of the verses in the Bible that always, always makes me a little nervous before I start judging other people is the one that says that you will be judged and you will be given the mercy that you show others. I think we should all step back and ask whether we are so perfect that we want to be the ones to cast that first stone. Let he who is out sin cast the first stone. I'm in no position to cast the first stone. And quite frankly, in over a decade in this news business, it is fair to say, looking straight into the camera, I've seen a lot, I know a lot, and I know that there are very few people in this industry or in politics that could live by the standard of perfection. Cast the first stone, I would be careful. I think right now the entirety of everything that Brian has done, including the Peabody Awards that he won for his remarkable Katrina coverage, should be taken into effect. And people should consider, again, the totality of a man's life.
There we have it. Jim in Middleton, good morning. You're with Kevin Miller at 580KIDO. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Kevin. Yeah, quick comment on the Brian Williams thing. You know, you're exactly right. If it was a traditional or conservative talk show host, news anchor, what have you, they would have been gone and it would have been on the front page, as it should. That's one thing and one of the reasons why I am a conservative, because we're held accountable. We're held to a higher standard. And, you know, you had mentioned that, you know, the millennials, if this guy gets off scot-free, oh, well. Well, honor and integrity come with a high price tag. And if you don't, if we're not held accountable to a higher standard, then none of this means nothing. Why should you come on the radio every day, Kevin, and tell the truth, or why should I, if it's just going to be passed over and so forth? But those are my thoughts on that, and as usual, the left gets a pass.
I would agree with you, and like I said, could you imagine the outrage if this were, you know, one of these conservative guys?
You know, you're right, Kevin, but let's take it a step further. You wouldn't be sitting idling by, idled, and let this go if the guy did that. Am I correct?
If he were a conservative guy, no, I wouldn't.
You know, that's one thing, again, you know, why I'm in this part of the field. Because we don't put up with that in our own camp, let alone anywhere else.
No, I would agree. I would agree. Jim, thank you for the call. You have a good day.
You too, Kevin. Take care.
All right. You're listening to Kevin Miller, 580KIDO.
Glenn Beck, weekdays at 9. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Joining us now from Fox News Radio at 580KIDO, Jared Halperin with the latest on our response to ISIS. Jared, good morning.
Good morning to you, Kevin.
Certainly, you take a look at what has happened and transpired over the past week, the video of the Jordanian pilot being burned alive, the response from Jordan in our country. What's resonating in Washington right now?
Well, the debate really is much the same. Certainly, the rhetoric's a little bit different given the gravity of the situation. But we do expect at least maybe this week, certainly we would think, sometime before the congressional recess in a couple of weeks, that we get a AUMF, an authorization for the use of military force. This is something that the White House has been working on with some key Capitol Hill lawmakers to basically replace the existing authority that President Obama believes he has to go after ISIS, and that's that AUMF from way back more than a decade ago after 9/11 that authorized then-President Bush to go after Al-Qaeda, although it's a very umbrella-type document that has given a lot of discretion to both President Bush and President Obama in this anti-terror campaign. The thought here is that this is a different kind of mission, and it needs to be very pinpointed, very strategic. And there are a lot of competing proposals. One would limit the geography of this mission to, say, Iraq or Syria, wherever intelligence says ISIS is operating. Some proposals have said that there should be a time frame on it specific to a certain amount of time, and then you basically reapply for authorization after that time. Others would allow U.S. troops if needed on the ground. Some proposals would not. So that's the debate going on Capitol Hill, is what sort of authorization is Congress prepared to give President Obama? What kind of authorization, on the other hand, is President Obama going to ask Congress? Will he ask for authorization to leave the possibility of troops on the ground? Will he argue that this should not be geographically specific? And that's the debate happening as well, not just between lawmakers, but obviously between some lawmakers in the White House.
Jared, what's the mood there? Obviously, we've talked about the defense budget and doing more with less. Now you have the ratcheting up, if you will, of the ISIS efforts there. What's the mood on the Hill from, let's say, Congress as opposed to the White House? Great job on the proposals from the president.
Proposals are both from the president and the White House, or is it from Congress. You actually have Congress. So the way it's been interesting how this has gone down is, for some time, Speaker Boehner has said that he wants a vote on an AUMF, but has said that the way it works historically is for the White House to draft it and send it to Congress, and Congress decides on it. The White House has said, well, we're happy to debate this, but we want Congress to give us proposals on what they want it to look like. That's why we're sort of in this holding pattern right now, this stalemate, with now negotiations happening between Capitol Hill and between the White House over what this AUMF document will ultimately look like. Certainly you don't want to be in a situation where one side or the other doesn't like it. They put it on the House floor and it fails. So I think that's why you're seeing this sort of, at this point, behind closed doors discussion about what should be included, what shouldn't be included, what could the White House muster, what could congressional Democrats and Republicans muster.
Jared Halpern with us, Fox News Radio. You know, I was thinking of you this weekend.
As many people do.
Especially during the George Stephanopoulos program.
Okay.
Due to our many talks about the 26.
We both are height challenged.
Well, and I'm with you, so just call us the little big three. However, they were talking about the 2016 presidential race, and you and I talk about that quite a bit.
Yeah.
And they said that Hillary Clinton, you know, it's really, there aren't any opponents, even though Joe Biden's going to Iowa. I wondered your thoughts on her path to the nomination.
Well, I mean, that's interesting because I've talked to a lot of people about that, and certainly you don't want a coronation. Democrats don't want a coronation of Hillary Clinton, I don't think. At the same time, she would be the Democrat to beat, and certainly she has the organization in place. She has the finances in place. She has a staff that seems to be getting in place. She is leaps and bounds, it would seem, ahead of anybody else. That being said, Jim Webb, former senator from the state of Virginia, has actually launched an exploratory committee, the only person, by the way, to have done that, the only person who has taken a formal step in the presidential process. As much as we talk about Jeb Bush and Ted Cruz and Rand Paul and all the others, Scott Walker, he's actually launched an exploratory committee. So it does seem like there will be challenges. I think the question is how serious the Democratic establishment sees those challenges, and what's the timeline for that? The benefit that Secretary of State Clinton has is she can wait an awfully long time before she launches an official formal bid, and it sounds like, you know, from reporting that's been done, that time frame may be later, May or June. Certainly you're going to see Republicans get in the race weeks, if not months, before May or June. The question is, will Democrats wait for that to happen, or will they try and get ahead of the curve? You have guys like Martin O'Malley, who's a two-term Democratic governor from Maryland, who is made some visits recently to New Hampshire and other places. You would think if he were to run, it would be at least on the social issues left of presumably Hillary Clinton. You have guys like Jim Webb that want to target her specifically on foreign policy. A lot of talk, obviously, about Elizabeth Warren, who is very fiscally liberal and sort of the anti-Wall Street sort of candidate. Very interesting that her views on Wall Street reform and Rand Paul's views on Wall Street reform almost dovetail in some areas. So it sets up a lot of different camps and a lot of different political thoughts, but certainly the ball's in her court, and she gets to, as the early front runner, decide how this timeline plays out. But I do think that there is some belief amongst Democrats that they don't want to see a coronation. They do want to see a primary. Whether or not it's competitive, they can't really control. But, you know, they don't want this process to be dominated by Republicans with all of the debates and all the attention Republicans are getting. you know, that's free media for Republicans. And so I do think that that's part of the concern from Democrats as well.
And Jared, she's going to have a lot of the Obama folks in there. One quick thought.
Yeah, a lot of them have already left the administration to start looking her direction.
One quick thought. Have we ever seen anything this talented, this deep when we're talking about the Republicans? Granted, it's early, but this is the money primary right now when we're talking about possibly 12 or 16 candidates?
It is a lot of folks. It was funny. I was talking recently with Larry Sabato, who you hear on our air a lot, and he – I think was half joking when he said, I don't know how they're going to do that. And it's Fox News that has that first debate. I don't know how they're going to do that first debate. there's going to be podium space. They're going to have to do like lightning rounds to get through everybody. You're right. This seems to be one of the deepest benches. Now, you're right. It's early. We'll see how long, you know, this list actually gets and how quickly people start to drop out. But could you imagine that the first debate is in August, which is not that far away.
Right.
I mean, I don't know how it looks in August if you have presumably 16 or 17 people that are all sort of in Iowa on the same day trying to get that support. And certainly the path for different people is different. I think Iowa may be less important to some folks as others, New Hampshire more important to others than. And so maybe that sort of helps separate the flock a little bit. But you're right. I can't think of a time, at least in modern presidential history, where you have so many people so early on sort of all lumped together when you look at this polling.
Jared, we always appreciate it. We'll see you soon.
Sure thing.
Jared Halper joining us, Fox News Radio, 649. Kevin Miller in the morning, 580KIDO. Jared joins us.
Ramsey, weekdays at noon. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Chair or not, because anchors are basically newsreaders, but he also has an important title of managing editor. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, this may be one reason to take a look at this trend in which the network evening news anchors are also given the title of managing editor. Does that mean that in cases where there are controversies, and there's been more than one controversy, that they are separated from sort of an independent look or an independent viewpoint of somebody who might be able to say to them, should you really be doing this or asking questions, versus when they're in charge? I can tell you these network anchors are surrounded by what we call yes men and yes people who won't tell them the hard truths or raise questions because they are in essence in charge of the show technically. They're in charge of the person who wants to tell the emperor that he's wearing no clothes.
Right. Boy, that's true in our workplace. By the way, good morning. Kevin Miller with you here at 580KIDO. That is Cheryl Atkinson with Howard Kurtz on The Big Fox, the Fox News Channel, talking about Brian Williams. And just imagine, my friends, if it had been somebody that you know and that you loved, somebody that, you know, it's on a talk show or a conservative, they would be run. That's the double standards that we have in our society today. We go to the emails with Bob. Kevin, if Brian Williams had real class, he would say this: as of today, I am stepping down as anchor at NBC. I've had a good run, but after the lies that I've told, I will never have the credibility that I need for this job. Don't worry about me. I've made enough money for several lifetimes. It's time for me to go do something else, probably to CNN. Let's continue on with Howard Kurtz and Cheryl Atkinson, because this gets interesting. Are you going to blow up your $10 million a year investment?
I mean, titles aside, you have an anchor like Brian Williams, you know, making more than $10 million a year when he is the franchise, so it's hard enough. I guess people say this about a president, too, being in a bubble and surrounded by people telling you how great you are. And so even this business about NBC not conducting an internal investigation, instead it's just a fact-gathering process. But a lot of people might say, well, why not have an outside ombudsman or investigator look into this? And it comes back to what you're saying. You've got the guy who's the anchor, the managing editor, the celebrity, the face of your news division. If you are on the payroll, it is hard to take that person on, whether that person's right or wrong.
And people are laying odds as to whether that person will survive. And if that person survives the controversy, those underneath him or working for him don't want to have been on the wrong side and be punished for that later. I agree with you about an independent look. Perhaps if I were in charge, and I shouldn't be, but perhaps if I were, I would think of bringing in somebody like the Poynter Institute or ask a neutral journalism organization to come in and help with this to lend an air of credibility into the inquiry. But then you are stuck. You've invited an outsider to come in and look at your organization, and if they find things that are embarrassing or damaging, there's not much you can do about it.
Well, I would say too bad, because you at least are showing that you're going to be open, that you're letting somebody who has an independent judgment investigate and let the chips fall where they may.
Right, but that's not going to happen when you have a $10 million investment in Brian Williams and he's been, what, the anchor for 10 years. It really comes down to, unfortunately, the cynical world that we live in when it comes to honesty, integrity, credibility. Let's see, do you go to Scott Pelley? Do you go to David Murr? Do we go to Brian Williams? I mean, really, does it make sense that we have Brian Williams at Katrina and everything else? Now, it comes to a point when is enough enough with these folks? And how many times, whether it's Brian Williams or Katie Couric, they've done their very best to go after conservative folks. As I've said before, there are things that you don't embellish. One of them is when you're with the military. You don't embellish that you were a lifesaver if you weren't, because those guys do it each and every day. They make the extraordinary seem ordinary. They should be honored. Not you shouldn't try and steal their stories, right? Time for traffic now at 5. Coming up next, Dave Petso. Is it time to get rid of the dollar? How about a digital dollar? Are we all going digital when it comes to our money? We'll talk about that more with Dave Petso, with Kevin Miller.
Idaho's